oftentimes some of the Medicare Advantage plans sound great, but what if you really dig into them, you could have more out-of-pocket exposure. And like Brent and I are always conservative and thinking, hey, how do we limit, you know, unknowns?
Right.
And out-of-pocket exposure could be one of those unknowns for sure.
Welcome to the Retirement Cafe with certified financial planners Dan Reese and Brent Oliver. At our cafe, we believe your retirement plan should be life-giving and custom-made, just like a hot cup of coffee. Here in mid-Michigan, with an office in Jackson, the Retirement Cafe is open for business.
Well, welcome back into the Retirement Cafe. I'm Ben George. They are Dan Reese and Brent Oliver, certified financial planners at Avery Wealth in Michigan. And you know, we're continuing our series today. We started with two episodes already. It's a four-part series. So this will be part three of the four-part series on the different stages of money. We've talked about accumulation, talked about transitioning to retirement. Today, we move to the distribution phase, which is a key phase, and we're going to talk all about that today on the podcast. Let me welcome in Dan and Brent. Good to talk to you guys. How are you?
Great. Hey, good to hear from you.
I am doing well, doing well. End of the year, you guys ready to turn the page to 2021?
Who isn't?
Isn't everybody? Yeah. Yeah.
That's an easy one.
I got to start with the softball.
Yeah, that's right.
To get the show going.
Yeah, I think we all would have hit the fast forward button a little bit throughout this year if we could, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, across the board. But hopefully you're doing well wherever you're listening to the podcast. And whenever you're listening to it, hopefully everything is good for you. And as we move forward, we're going to talk about these different stages of money, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Remember, you can hear the first two. And I guess, guys, would you recommend listening to these in order? Can you listen to them out of order?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be good to listen to them all, but really, we tried to do them so they'd stand alone somewhat, too. So if you're in that specific stage,
perfect.
You could just kind of listen to that one on its own, too.
Okay. AveryWealth.com. You can find every episode there. So make sure you visit the website. Plus, you can also get in contact with Dan and Brent. They're on the website as well. And you can call them at 517-783-1695 if you want to discuss whatever stage of money you are currently in or looking ahead to your future. So let's talk about this third stage. Part three is all about the distribution phase, which really comes down to optimizing income from all of your sources, including in your investments, and you got to do so in a tax-efficient way. So, Dan and Brent, why is this phase so important, especially when you're talking about ensuring the health and longevity of your plan?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, the big thing is when most people get ready to enter the distribution phase where they're done working, they've got to kind of start turning on income from other sources. We see quite often there's like a default, right, Brent? There's just like a certain way that they're going to do it.
Yeah, they just have it set in their mind, I think. Maybe they've talked about it at the water cooler or something,
right.
I don't know, where they just feel like there's a certain way that they have to do it. Maybe it's turn on Social Security. I'm going to retire. I have to turn on Social Security.
Yeah.
Right? I hear that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like Social Security, so that's going to fill this much of my need. And then I've got some money in the bank that I've kind of saved up. I'll use that first, and then I'll kind of move on, right?
Yeah, because they've saved that other retirement money in their retirement accounts for a long time, right? And now they've gotten to the point, and it's unnerving, right? I think for a lot of people to start digging into that money. And so they don't really think about this as a collective effort. Like, let's, you know, take inventory of everything that we have and figure it out. It's just like they default to this particular strategy.
Yeah, and I think that whole thing that we're talking about, the default, Social Security's turned on, use my regular savings first. When that's gone, then get into my other retirement accounts, right?
Yeah.
It's just kind of common. I mean, that's what I would say if you ask most people that come in to see us and they're getting ready to retire, and we ask that question, you know, what's kind of your plan?
I would say 75% of the time at least, probably 90 really, that's where they go to for that money.
Yeah. Yeah. And the problem is, Ben, as we talk about this, is, and that's why this phase is so important to understand, is that that may or may not be the best way for you to do it. And when we get into this information, you're going to find that could have a pretty substantial impact on the success and the health of your overall plan. So we want to make sure that we understand all the resources, and as we start building this, that we're using them all in an efficient way.
Well, this obviously sounds like a very important segment of our four-part series. And if you've listened to one of the previous episodes, you'll know this. But each of these episodes in this series, we're going to talk about four core areas: investing, taxes, estate, and risk protection. So let's jump right into the investment part of this segment. Other things that we need to be thinking about with our investments when you enter into this phase?
Yeah, I'm going to ask, let's see, Brent, what's the biggest investment that nobody thinks of as an investment?
Well, Social Security is an investment that you've made. That's your money. And we talk about that all the time with our clients. You need to think of that as your resource. You've contributed to it throughout the years, and it's something that you need to optimize, right? And that means different things for different people, but optimizing is making sure that when you take it, it's coordinated with the rest of your plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I agree with you 100%. It's almost like we hear this a lot. They look at that as someone else's money.
Yeah.
And so the idea is well, I'm going to use someone else's money first, and then when I'm done using that, I'll use my own money. Well, the reality, like Brent was saying, is it's all your money, yeah. Right? Right on your statement, it shows money you've contributed, money your employer has contributed, right?
Yeah.
And what benefit you get. And one of the best parts about it's an inflation-protected benefit, right? So it's like it's one of the only things, if not the only thing, in your overall bucket of resources that you can count on to maybe increase some over time with inflation. So it's really important that you use it and you treat it like your own money and as an investment.
I mean, I can see how people may not look at Social Security and pensions as investments. It kind of makes sense. But now, while you're keeping those things in mind, what are some of the key things to consider with investments in the distribution phase?
I think, you know, just bare bone things that you really, really need to understand is just the overall risk that you have in your portfolio. And, you know, what that means in the short term, and which is really, really important because that's a lot of times where mistakes are made. But then really what you should be able to get over a long period of time for assuming that level of risk.
Yeah. And I mean, like we talked about just a second ago with Social Security and pensions, those are part of your overall risk profile and allocation. So really understanding how those play in with your other resources. You know, we see this all the time where people tend to like mentally put things in separate containers. Like, here's my Social Security, here's my IRA, here's my 401k, here's my savings or brokerage account. And when you start looking at this stuff, you really need to start kind of collectively looking at it, right, Brent? Not just individually, but how it all right. works together and how the investment risk level looks with everything.
Yeah, you want to look at those. I mean, I think it is important to look at them separately, right? Because, and we're going to talk some about this, but they all have different tax treatments and things like that. So that's why it's so important to coordinate it all together, like Dan's referring to. Is like, all right, let's look at everything that we have in it separately. But then when we start to put it together, how do we make it work best and give us the best chance to be successful in our long-term plan?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that Brent and I do all the time. When you start collecting this data and getting it organized of what your resources are, is then understanding, okay, how much do I need, or what kind of income do I need those resources to produce, and how can I allocate it to actually give me the highest probability of having success?
Right. And a lot of times with that default plan that we were referring to before, the conversation is totally different than that. It's where it's, hey, you know, I know that it costs me $4,000 a month to live, right? Social Security is going to give me $2,000. I can take $2,000 from my retirement accounts. I'm set. Right?
Right.
And that works, right? Maybe when somebody's 62, but what does that look like when you're 82 or 72? Does that still work? And that's what Dan's talking about. When you're putting this all together and looking at your probability of being successful throughout your plan, that's where the conversation changes.
Yeah. And I think let's take a minute too. Let's just talk a little bit about some of the things you should look at. You know, like Brent was saying, looking at things separately, also looking at them together. When we talk about looking at them separately, the reason you need to do that are there's certain things that you have to know in order to know which accounts you can even use at that time, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like there are restrictions on certain things, so you need to understand things like how old are you, right?
Right.
That's a pretty big deal because certain accounts maybe you can't really get at very easily based on your age. If you've got Roth IRAs, people might think, hey, I'm going to use that the first couple of years. Well, have you had it 5 years, right?
Right.
There could be some issues with how much money you can get out of that thing. So looking at like penalties, if you had to take something out early, you know, what types of things. Actually, Social Security is a good example.
Yeah.
If you take it earlier than your full retirement age, there is a penalty. And it's right on, you know, they'll tell you exactly what it is, right?
And understanding that cost of living that Dan was referring, adjustment, that it's the inflation that happens on your Social Security benefit. If you're reducing your benefit early, taking that penalty, as Dan referred to, now the cost of living adjustment forever is lower, right?
Right.
Because a percentage, you know, a 3% of $1,500 is less than 3% of $3,000, right?
Yeah,
and so you have to understand how that's going to impact you in the long term
And I think that's one of the things, too. That's another thing to look at. Is there a benefit for leaving a resource alone for a longer period of time, right? Well, with maybe a Social Security or pension benefit, there could be, you know, a payoff to leaving it alone for a later time. And like understanding things like your stock assets, which most families are going to have some money in stocks to get some long-term growth. You know, what should you do with those? How should you handle those? You know, if they're longer term, what does that really mean? And when can you tap into those types of things, right? All really important things to think about. And then really after you get that allocation, you know, in making sure it's going to fulfill your goals and are comfortable with the risk that you've got, it's time to determine the order that you use those resources.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about this in the next part, the tax part's the next part, I think, that we're going to go on to, and how the order in which you use them in the manner in which you use them has a significant impact on the taxes.
Yep, absolutely. So it's real good stuff to think about.
Well, there's plenty to think about when it comes to investing in this stage of money. So that's really great information all around provided there. So let's jump to those taxes that you just mentioned. What should we be thinking about here in this distribution phase regarding taxes?
Well, I would say that, Dan, you could speak to this. When we talk to people, a lot of times, I mean, if you ask somebody, do you think you're going to have a tax issue in retirement? What do you usually hear from people?
No, I only pay taxes when I work.
Yes.
When I get to retirement, I'm all done, right?
Yeah, well, my income's not going to be the same or whatever may be the case. And because they're going to that default plan a lot of times, right? And so they think, well, I'm not going to have any tax issues at all.
Yeah, and right? That can be the real difference. Understanding your taxes in retirement can really be the difference between having a really successful plan and maybe, I mean, even possibly running out of money if you don't really understand how the impact those taxes can have on you.
Yeah, we talk about all the time on this podcast about doing small things over a long period of time, just little steps that make huge differences in really managing your taxes in retirement is probably a little bit bigger than a little step, but really the things that you're doing are just minor little steps. Like when to take Social Security is a huge part of that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny too, when you think about it, and we, Brett and I always kind of try to look at things, I would say holistically. So, you know, it's important to break down the minutiae, if you will, you know, the little specific things about the details, but it's also good to look holistically, and taxes are a great example of that, because when you start thinking about taxes in retirement, the very first thing you want to do is you want to kind of understand what is my tax liability through all years of retirement, right?
Right.
And you want to understand how can that change based on that default scenario we were talking about earlier versus maybe a better, more well thought out plan where you can manage taxes throughout and possibly reduce the overall burden over time, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking about that default. What was the default? Turn on Social Security and use my after-tax money, my money in the bank first, right?
Yeah.
Typically, if you did that, how many taxes would you have that first year? What would you have in taxes?
You'd have none.
Probably none.
Yeah, you would have, most likely you would have none or very, very little amount of tax. And so what that can create is you're just kind of paying zero tax in the early years, and then what happens when you start taking distributions from your IRA?
It's like anything, right? If you pay nothing early, I always think of it like money in general, right? That's kind of a general rule about money. Like if you take a small payment to buy some car that you want, you're going to have that payment a long time. And at the end of the day, you're probably going to pay a heck of a lot more.
Yeah, you can go buy a couch, right? and not pay any of the interest for a year,
right?
Or whatever. Well, you're just paying more down the road, same thing.
And that's taxes. So it's like, what I think Brent and I really want to get across in this area of taxes is really understanding that there are a lot of different ways to use the resources that you have, including your Social Security, pensions, retirement accounts, and all the other things. And there's a good way to do it that's tax optimized, which means how do you take the money from those things on a systematic basis throughout all of your retirement? And there's a default method that generally doesn't work out great.
Yeah, and that's a natural thing to go to, I think. Mm-hmm. Right? Because a lot of people do that when they're working. And this is something that we fight through with people right now, is that paying less in tax in this calendar year may not be the best thing for you, right? So you want to pay the least amount of taxes over your lifetime, right? Not, I don't want to pay taxes this year, kicking the can down the road, and it creates a tax bomb down the road, right? That where you're paying way more in tax down the road than you would ever paid before.
Yeah.
Right. So it's all about paying the least amount possible in your lifetime.
Yeah. That's right? A great way to put it. And some of the things that we talk about, people are like, well, how do you do that? What are some things that actually you could do, tangible things? Well, one of the things is, let's just back up to that default scenario. Maybe a simple thing is if you did turn on Social Security, maybe there's some balance between money you take out of retirement accounts that are pre-tax, meaning that you have to pay tax as it comes out, and then some of the money out of your after-tax money, like your savings account. Something like that may allow you to pay a little bit of tax now and reduce tax later, right?
Yeah, because what happens when you're 72 years of age now?
Yeah, 70, yeah.
At 72, you have to start taking required minimum distributions. And so if you've never touched those IRAs until that point, well, guess what? Your required minimum distribution is higher because your balance of your account would be higher, right? And so that would force, in that default scenario, at that point in time, if you've never used any of those assets and never paid taxes for it, you're going to pay it in that year.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing, too, that you think about is putting off Social Security a bit. So one of the things, remember, it's your money, right? And what do we know about Social Security? From 62 till your full retirement age, which is going to vary based on when you were born, anywhere from 66 to 67, you have to look on your statement. You know, every year that you wait from 62 to that age, you get about a 7% increase on that benefit. Most people would love a guaranteed 7% return on money, right?
Oh, yeah, guaranteed. That's a great number.
So, like, if you do that, and so if you say, okay, I'm going to wait on my Social Security, that would allow you to actually take even more money out of that pre-tax account early at a lower tax rate, which would in turn reduce that forced distribution at 72 at a higher tax rate.
Right.
So that's another simple, you know, strategy. And keep in mind, don't run out and implement this stuff.
No.
You know, you need to have a little disclaimer, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to run this as part of your own scenario to see when is the best time for you to take Social Security, right?
And yeah.
To work within your plan. And to, you know, help you pay the least amount of tax.
Yeah, a lot of people don't look at Social Security choices impacting taxes, but they absolutely do.
Oh, yeah, because, and we don't want to get too far in the weeds here, but the amount of other income, and this is what we were alluding to earlier when we were talking about Social Security, the amount of other income that you have when you're taking Social Security impacts how much of your Social Security is taxable.
Right.
So if you have a lot of other income, right? More of your Social Security is taxable. So it's really, you know, this decision is really important.
Yeah, it all fits together, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then another thing that's a possibility for a little strategy that people might use are Roth conversions. So, like, you know, we always talk about, Brent and I, you might hear us sometimes talk about the free period. And what that is when you're 59 and a half to age 70, or now 72, because it used to be 70 and a half, now it's 72 for required minimum distributions, you kind of have flexibility with what you can do with, you know, some of your IRA money. And one of the things that people sometimes do is they say, hey, I have a really low tax bracket. I am going, and I don't need that much income yet, so I'm going to convert some money from my pre-tax IRA account into my Roth IRA account. So in essence, what are you doing? You're just paying your tax early, right?
Yeah, just prepaying your tax at a lower tax bracket than what you think you'll be at down the road, right?
Yep.
And
yep.
So it just helps you prepay your taxes at a lower rate.
Yeah, and so when you look at that, so if you run the math on that, sometimes it does a couple of things. Number one, again, we got money out of that pre-tax account at a lower rate, right? So remember, that reduces the required minimum distribution later because we have a lower account value. But the other thing it does is it kind of leverages long-term growth in a tax-free account. So all that money that's growing in the Roth account moving forward, you never pay any tax on it again.
Right.
Nor do your kids, right?
So it's it's huge for your heirs, and you're just not gonna. It's like, I'm gonna pay my tax right now at this point in time at a lower rate, and then all that compounding that I get out of that account from now on, I don't ever have to worry about taxes again.
Yeah, and another little side little tidbit on it is if you do need some money out of that Roth IRA down the road, it's not counted as income for Social Security. So that can mean that you could take money out of there and keep Social Security, you know, less of it taxable, which is a really nice little thing. And I think one final area in taxes, just talk a little bit about charitable intent. So if you're charitable, right, if that's part of your overall plan that you want to give some money away, there's some kind of neat things you can do, you know, within retirement. So number one, let's talk a little bit about before you're 70 and a half. So you retire at 62 as an example. One of the things we talked about a little bit in the transitioning stage is if you had maybe funded some donor, what are called donor advised funds, with extra income during that period because you had more income than you needed to live on. You could then use that money within those first few years of retirement, right, Brent, to like fund your charitable goals.
Yeah.
Which is really nice because it's a kind of it's a tax-free thing, right? So you're basically getting money to your charities. You're not having to take it out of an IRA where it would be taxable because you pre-funded that in earlier years. And then what happens at 70 and a half, Brent, which was one of the greatest little rules that you can use.
You can start using your IRA distributions as a qualified charitable distribution to send to a charity which is not going to pay the taxes on it, right?
Yeah.
And so you're not paying the taxes on that as well.
It's great because it's a great way to get money out of that IRA. Again, pre-tax money, right? We're trying to get money out of that with as low of a tax rate as possible. And we can do that. And it's actually quite generous. The IRS allows up to $100,000 when you're 70 and a half. And by the way, if there's a husband and wife that each have that IRA, they can each do up to $100,000 in a given year. And that never shows up on your tax return. Now, you can't deduct it. It's not an itemized deduction because you never realize that income. But it's a really great way to fund charities and
save you on the taxes. And so if you are at that age and you are taking, you know, money out and you are giving it to a charity, you should be using this because it's just a way really to maximize a gift to a charity and helps you out with your taxes at the same time.
Yeah, we have tons of clients. Once they get to 70 and a half, they'll come in December or January and say, okay, they may have an amount they give their church each year. They'll come in and just have one check written to the church, or in this case, and they'll take it over to them and say, this is my contributions for the calendar year. And then that money doesn't have to come out of their regular budget, which is great because it just saves them. And it works with any charity. I was just using that as an example.
Yeah, and so if you haven't figured it out at this point yet, this is probably the longest segment in this whole series that we've done. And that ought to tell you how important taxes are in all of the phases. But it really, like, if you've done it right at this point, at this distribution phase, you can really, really make a huge impact in your overall plan, right? If you've set yourself up early to do it.
No question.
Yeah, I think this is probably why so many families just either don't pay enough attention to it because it's so complex, or just put it off because, you know, God, it's overwhelming. I got to get to this at some point, but I'll just wait and see. I mean, I can see why this becomes like, you know, not a priority for people because there's a lot to think about.
Oh yeah. And obviously it can be really confusing, but the reality is like what our philosophy has always been, we're certified financial planners. We are not CPAs.
Right.
We know a lot about taxes because we work with them every day, but we always talk with, you know, our clients, CPAs, to make sure the things we're thinking about and the strategies that we're considering really are going to work well for them. Make sure we're not missing anything, right? So when you have two professionals that have some knowledge in this area kind of overlooking it, you can really get a good outcome. And we wouldn't expect like the average person to really understand all the details of this because it is confusing.
All right, let's talk about the third core area of the distribution phase. That's estate planning. What are we looking at here?
Yeah, I think the big thing right away, and we talk about this in each phase, make sure your documents are up to date, right, Brent?
Yeah. Yeah, so the healthcare documents, the powers of attorneys, your wills, your trusts, you just want to make sure that, and I do see this sometimes when people come in, and it's great to help them and push them towards getting this done, but a lot of times we'll see people, well, yeah, I have those. We did them 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, well, that's great, but that's probably not current enough. Like, do you have, I mean, some of them might have kids that are new in the past 20 years, right?
Yeah.
And certainly grandkids and other things. And so you want to make sure that this is up to date.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And by the way, real quick note on that, many banks and many hospitals may not accept something that's that old.
Yeah.
You know, there's a good chance they're going to say, no, we don't know that that's really, you know, what the wishes were because it's so old. So it's important to get those updated. And I think there's a couple things. We just wanted to go through some maybe things that you should think about when you're, you know, completing those documents or you're updating them and you're talking about, you know, your wealth transfer plan. And, you know, like Brent would just mention one, kids, like changes to, you know, new kids, new grandkids, have you considered them? But what about, you know, we know unfortunately in America, over 50% of marriages end in divorce, right? So one of the things you always want to remember as you get into this phase is that if there's kids from prior marriages and maybe a mixed family, you want to make sure that you've really thought out your wealth, your estate plan, right, Brent?
Yeah, you want to make sure that your wishes and that your spouse wishes, even if they're not the same, that you're able to work through those and do the best you can to make sure that you're not leaving somebody out or just neglecting it, I think is the biggest problem that we see is like, this is too difficult to talk about. I don't want to do it at all.
Yes.
Right. And so that's not going to be a good result.
No.
Right.
Because it's simple. Like here, we go back to the default plan, right?
Yeah.
The default plan is somebody passes away, all their wealth goes to their spouse, and their spouse then makes a decision when they pass away where all that money goes or whatever all the assets go. So if you died first, there's a possibility that your kids could be
left without, because that money then goes to your spouse who
maybe
has their own kids from maybe a previous marriage as well, or whatever may be the case. Maybe they get remarried, as Dan's referring to. And then assets get mixed together and it can create a lot of problems. And so it's just better to have that talked out and dealt with ahead of time.
Yeah. And if you work with a qualified estate planning attorney, you know, number one, like Brent and I have these conversations with clients all the time, but you know, obviously we're not attorneys. They need, you need to go to an attorney to have them write that up. There are plenty of tools to accomplish this stuff. You know, it's never really the technical part of accomplishing it. It's really like Brent was saying earlier, is the people actually talking about it.
Yeah,
right?
I think that's hard to do with your family a lot of times, is to have those conversations, but in this part, it's just so important to be able to disclose everything and make sure that everybody is on the same page. And that doesn't mean everybody's going to have the same opinion, but you want to make sure that you have all that out there.
For sure, having a good conversation about it. And a couple other things that we always like to, you know, urge people to think about is, are there special things you'd want to do for grandchildren? Sometimes we have clients that say, you know what, I'd like to actually do something specific for them, versus just a simple where everything just goes to the kids or, you know, or some split like that. And the other thing is what, like special needs, right, Brent?
Yeah, you want to make sure there's laws and things like that. If there's special needs children involved with assets and levels of assets and things like that, that needs to be addressed. And so if you do have a special needs child or a special needs grandchild and you're intending to have them receive money when you pass away, you really need to talk to an attorney and have that special needs trust created and so that there's no problems down the road, which can really impact the person receiving the assets.
Sure. And then just a couple other things, just making sure whatever charitable planning or wishes you have, you consider and what's the best way to do that. And we'll talk a little more of that actually in the last phase of this with your legacy. We'll get into that in detail, but for the most part, our best advice in this is that stay on top of it. Make sure things are updated. We do have checklists if you ever want to request one that kind of helps you think to go through things to think about when you're running into these, you know, this time in your life. But the reality is that we've seen clients that have gone overboard making it too technical or too many rules, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want to do that either. It's like you want to make it as simple as possible, but yet not too simple, right? If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It does make sense. And there's some great things to think about in terms of the estate planning area of distribution. So now let's move to our fourth and final core area, which is risk protection. This is always important for each stage of money. What can you guys tell us about this part?
Yeah, I think the first one really isn't, it's kind of different than what you might think about. But the first thing we think about when protecting someone is making sure that you don't run out of money, right?
Yeah. And so that goes along with investing and making sure that you're positioned in the proper way to make sure, one, that you don't run out of money, or that you don't have too much risk in your portfolio or too little risk, to help you achieve the things that are most important to you.
Yeah, and not throwing away too much money on taxes like we talked about. Yeah. That can also sink your plan. Healthcare is a major concern. You know, we always talk about making sure you're using real numbers. Like, I think that's one of the things that people underestimate all the time is, what are my out-of-pocket expenses? What might those be? And making sure you understand those, right?
Yeah. In our software that we use, I mean, how many times does the plan work really well until you put healthcare in there?
Oh, yeah.
And we use, I feel like we use very realistic numbers in that area, but it's expensive, right? And so you want to make sure that you're using some numbers that are realistic.
Yeah, and one thing I would note is, you know, be careful with Medicare choices when you come to that phase when you're picking out, you know, whether to do like a Medicare Advantage or traditional Medicare with a supplement and a drug plan. Oftentimes, some of the Medicare Advantage plans sound great, but what if you really dig into them, you could have more out-of-pocket exposure. And like Brent and I are always conservative and thinking, hey, how do we limit, you know, unknowns?
Right.
And out-of-pocket exposure could be one of those unknowns for sure. So,
and then I think the next thing you want to think about is just long-term care. And I know that we talked about this in the transition phase. A lot of times during the transition phase, before this distribution phase that we're talking about now, people are looking into long-term care coverage. But we talked about that. But the biggest thing is just make sure that you have a plan that if this happens, how are you going to pay for it? If
right.
it's long-term care insurance that you've purchased, great. If you have the resources and you're going to self-insure, great. Just make sure that you understand how it's going to impact your ability to be successful. And like Dan was talking about, not running out of money, you know, before you pass away.
Yeah. And really keep in mind, health insurance does not pay for long-term
right.
care. A lot of people think Medicare. You may hear people talk about Medicaid, which you can have some coverage there when you're out of resources, in essence, right? So that's important. And then one that we've talked about before, and we actually did a whole podcast on this, was a spouse passing away early.
Yeah,
probably one of the biggest missed planning items is people understanding how does my plan change if I lose a spouse early, right?
Yeah, and there's all kinds of different strategies, and we're not going to go into those. That we have that other podcast, but
yeah.
This is a huge risk to a lot of certainly default plans. You know, it's just running out of money because somebody passed away early and you've lost income. So one example, Social Security, right? If both spouses are alive, you're getting two Social Securities. When one passes away, you're left with the higher of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to make sure that your plan is putting this into consideration and that you've stress tested your plan to make sure that if this does happen, the surviving spouse is still going to be successful.
Yeah. I mean, tax hits can be big too. People forget, oh, you go from a married tax table to a single, your deductions go down, your tax rates go up. Couple other things that may not be on the top of your radar is like lack of proper liability coverage. We are big proponents. Go to your property and casualty agent, get a liability umbrella policy.
Yeah.
They're inexpensive. We've talked about it before. Gives you a lot of extra coverage. In today's world, who knows, right? What you might get sued for. It may not even be like reasonable, but it still covers you, right? And that can happen. And then one of the things, Brent, we talked about is experiencing a disability before your estate planning documents are done. This goes back to your estate planning and why it's so important to keep them up to date. People always think there's tomorrow. And if they're not up to date and all of a sudden you become, you know, have some type of a cognitive impairment where you can't update them, that could be really problematic from a risk protection standpoint. And what this might
and at least the people that are dealing with it. So if you're marrying your spouse and they're having to deal with all this and you've and the issue that you've had, your cognitive issue or something like that. I mean, it's just it's too much stress to put on one person. You want to make sure that this stuff is done.
Right, right. And the last one we throw in here is actually it's kind of a unique thing. But how bad can this deflate the plan, Brent?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're talking about focusing too much on investment. Like a percent return.
Right.
Right. And so, look, we all want to have a great percentage return, but we also really, at the end, just want to make sure that our clients are successful. Right. And so, making sure that we're coordinating all this together is way more important. And being successful in retirement is way more important than some percentage return that somebody achieved.
Yeah. And people get caught into that. We see it. I mean, we do our best to coach clients on it is let's focus on goals and make sure we're put in the best position to reach those goals. But people get sucked into watching the markets every day and like, well, this investment got this and that. I only have this one that didn't get quite as much. And, you know, it can really suck you in and it can really damage your plan because it oftentimes pushes people to make unreasonable changes in their investment strategy. And one of the things we know is there's many different investment strategies that will work if you let them work, right?
Yes.
But if you change it all the time.
Yeah, you're never getting that long, the long term with any of them if you're just constantly changing, you know, searching for some high percentage return.
Yeah, so that's our bonus risk management
that's right.
item for today.
Well, thanks for the bonus, and really thanks for all the information today. There's a lot that goes into the distribution phase. As you can tell from this episode, it's not just about maybe taking out some RMDs and collecting a Social Security check. It goes much, much deeper than that, and Dan and Brent have laid out a lot of detail throughout this episode. So a great piece to our four-part series. As we close this out, guys, do you have any final thoughts on this stage three?
Yeah, I think the thing is, with how complicated things are today entering retirement, it's just really important that you've got a well-thought-out plan, right, Brent? Make sure you're putting yourself in the best position.
Yeah, just getting with somebody that you trust, a certified financial planner, and making sure that you have a coordinated plan, looking at all your resources and making sure that you're going to optimize them.
Yeah, I mean, and it's really easy to miss something. We talk about this all the time. Like, you know, one of my favorite things is how pilots use checklists. And, you know, well, why do they use checklists? Because when you're 35,000 feet in the air, you don't want to have forgotten something, right? And so, and obviously, you know, for a lot of people, this can be close to as serious, right? If you run out of money, that doesn't make your retirement great. So we want to make sure you follow a good process. And like Brent was saying, find a good certified financial planner that you can trust. And the reason I say certified financial planner is because if someone's a CFP, they've taken, you know, they've had education in all these areas, right, Brent? Like taxes, investments, estate planning. And so they've got a lot of knowledge in that. And ideally find one that's worked with retirees, has gone through this process quite a few times and found all the different, you know, problems that might exist and things to look out for. And Brent, what's the big thing we talk about? Focus on what's really important, right?
Yeah, which is making sure that you're successful, right? And so it's not about accumulating the most money or any of those things. It's focus on the things that are truly important to you and build a plan around that.
Yeah, and like we always say, if you have questions, we're here. Reach out. Brent and I are happy to talk with you, answer your questions, get you pointed in the right direction. As I said, this stuff's confusing. The reason we do these podcasts is to help you understand some of the things you should be thinking about. But as we said earlier, you know, don't go run around and take action on this stuff. You want to make sure that any action you take is well thought out and you've run it past some professionals that have experience in this area.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you guys both for taking us through the distribution phase. This is just the third part of a four-part series we're doing on the four stages of money. Next up will be your legacy, a very important final piece to the puzzle. So you can find every episode online at averywealth.com. I encourage you to subscribe on the podcast so you'll have the next one delivered right to you. And until next time, looking forward to talking to you guys again, Dan and Brent. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
Information is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute investment, tax, or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified professional before taking any action. Avery Wealth Inc. is a registered investment advisory firm.